are back. We are back. It is time for take. I should have looked at this before. Yeah, I should have looked at this before. It is time for take 250. I'm going to guess it's 257. Oh, gosh. It's time for take 252. Not going to lie. I cannot remember the last time an August-September release date was so dry of movies. It's not to say we haven't had stuff that I'm sure is interesting. Like, I've heard good things about Gran Turismo. I've heard interesting things now about Dumb Money that just came out. There's been interesting things, but nothing enough that, like, me and TC are dying to go out to see. And since last week, me and Becky were in Arkansas. We went to the Arkansas-BYU game, which I will not formally discuss on the podcast because Arkansas had 14 penalties for 126 yards. So needless to say, we did lose. Did go down to the wire, though. It was a good game. But it is just a solo pod, a.k.a. just your boy, the Sweet Keeks. We've got a horror-themed podcast today. The reason we're doing a horror themed podcast is mainly because as I've been looking back at the horror films that have come out this year, they've like been kind of weak. Like, I wish that there was a better way to, I guess, say that, but the horror films in 2023 have been big letdowns. We're gonna get into that. We're gonna get into like the state of horror in 2023 and essentially what horror has looked like over the last 10 years. We've had a lot of classic horror films, but more specifically, let's talk about the box office performance and why, for me, like, horror is the best bang for your buck genre that's out there. So before we get into all that stuff, and then we've got a double header for all of you, okay? I'm going to be reviewing The Nun 2, which I might tag Becky in for. And then I'm going to review a new streaming film that just came onto Hulu called No One Will Save You. A really interesting alien horror abduction film that, I don't know, I liked a lot about, and then I didn't really understand a lot about it. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. But before we get into it, little update for me is not really a ton. School is nice, obviously, but it's interesting to see the students this year that feel like they've come in and are a little bit more prepared for school. I've also been told that it's because I'm a better teacher this year, which dubious at best. I don't know if that's totally true. I'm willing to believe it, though, but I also want to give them a little bit of credit. I get like Canvas messages about grades and people reaching out to me about what like everything's looking like. So I don't know. I've been really enjoying. I've been enjoying the year so far. One thing that I have noticed as well is a lot of critics, like a lot of students that'll watch them to be like, I think the lighting looks a little bit off on that one. And then they go and, you know, it's their first time making things and they go and make things and lighting looks a little bit off on theirs too. So I'm trying to balance telling them like your stuff is gonna suck, but also while being like, but that's okay. Like, everything sucks the first time that you make it. You've got to keep making more stuff if you want to get better. So the critics are kind of driving me insane. Which is, from what I've heard from one of my buddies talking about going to film school in college, is like, that's a lot of the kids there too. Which, when I first started teaching film at high school, I kind of was thinking, well, it would be fun to eventually move up and teach like college film. But the more that I hear about, and honestly from Becky, who doesn't even teach film, you know, she teaches global supply chain management, to hear about students at the college level and they kind of act like they know everything, you know, not to confuse them with teenagers that also feel that way, but it makes me a little bit hesitant to jump from high school to college. Maybe I would one day, but I like teaching high school kids because you still do have the humble kids who are really talented and make awesome stuff, and that gets me really, really excited about the future of the Copper Hills video production program. And you know what? I know that TC always gives a call to action. I'm going to give a nice little call to action, okay? My students have a YouTube page. It's CH Studios on YouTube. The letters CH space Studios. Every Wednesday or Thursday, depending on which day is a B-day, we do a live broadcast for the announcements and some little stories that they've made. So you know what you should do? Do yourself a favor and go watch that. Go subscribe to CH Studios. Maybe tune into one of their broadcasts. And they're having a good time. We're having a good time. The year has started off strong. And me and TC have really been enjoying. And I know we talked about it last week, or I guess last take that we did a couple weeks ago, is NFL Sunday ticket. TC went in. He bought it. We were kind of like, oh, let's see what it's like for that first week. And it is worth the money purely so I can go in and watch Zach Wilson play the quarterback position. If any of y'all don't know who Zach Wilson is, he was a quarterback that played in the state of Utah for a college called BYU. And he really popped during that COVID season where like some teams were playing college football, but it was mainly like high school teams that were eligible for the college level that did not have really any good playmakers or football players on there. So Zach Wilson obviously looked nice as he went into that NFL draft. Good arm. And so the Jets thought, well, we've got the second pick. There's a lot of good players that are out there, a lot of interesting options. But let's take this guy that played against a bunch of JV squads, and let's try him out at the professional level. Let's see what kind of quarterbacking chops he's got. And it's been, you know, 2 years now, and needless to say, not many quarterbacking chops. Hardly any at all. Broken clock is right twice a day, and I would say that's Zach Wilson when it comes to the quarterbacking position. Just you watch him, and this I'm gonna predict. If any of y'all want to just go watch highlights or watch like the first 5 minutes of a possession of a Jets game, this is what's gonna happen. They might hand the ball off, get a couple yards. Maybe they hand the ball off again, get a couple yards, and then it's 3rd and 6 or 3rd and 5, and Zach Wilson has to throw the football because the run game isn't working. So he'll get the ball, he'll roll back. The defense is already on him, so he'll step out of the pocket, which is the little kind of hole that the offensive linemen make to protect him. He'll run off to the right-hand side. He'll look downfield. It looks like he's going to throw a great pass, and then it just soars out of bounds. And you'll see that happen probably 15 times. But he will give you 2 good drives where you can feel kind of confident about that. So NFL Sunday ticket has been worth it just to watch Zach Wilson attempt to play quarterback, which coming from me, I've never played quarterback in my life. Maybe I have at a Turkey Bowl, which is playing football on Thanksgiving Day in the United States, but not much else. So Monday quarterbacking at its finest. Now, as we talk about the horrors of watching Zach Wilson play football, I kind of want to get into, it's not going to be like a lot of the meat and potatoes on here, but like the big segment that I wanted to talk about is the state of horror in 2023. So I like went back to look at and see, okay, what are the best horror films from the year? And I started to get like a little bummed out because while we've had some good stuff, It's still outside of the top 10. And to give you kind of a little bit of an idea, last year by September, we had already had Nope. We had already had Barbarian. We had already had, I'm going to go through and look at some of the other ones too, because I've got them on my list here. Barbarian. We had had The Northman, which wasn't horror, but it came from Robert Eggers, who is a great horror director. We had Prey, which is a thriller. We had Pearl. We had already had X too. We had all sorts of really, and then one of my favorite ones, we had Men, which came out last year, I think in like February or March. And then we were still due to get stuff like The Menu, Werewolf by Night, and other horror films that had ended up being really, really interesting from last year. And then when I go to look at this year, it's been a little bit of a bummer. Like, my highest rated horror new release is Talk to Me, which is at number 9 of my top 10, just behind John Wick 4 and just ahead of Women Talking. Then you go down. You got Scream 6. You got Bo is Afraid, which I don't know. I don't really know what you would classify that as. You go into this new one that I just saw called No One Will Save You, which was really fun. Evil Dead Rise, which is a good time. An awesome found footage horror film from Dutch Marin called Horror in the High Desert, Minerva, the sequel to, I believe, maybe 2019 or 2020's The Horror in the High Desert. Really awesome found footage. I'm trying to get him to come on for an interview. We've been chatting on Instagram, and hopefully he'll come on in an interview near the end of the year. But we also had some new Black Mirror episodes, which are horror, and The Boogeyman. But for the most part, the only real standout has been Talk to Me. I guess you could say the new Scream I really liked, but it was nothing like Nope or Barbarian or even Pearl that we had gotten by the time that this had come around at the same time of year. And it got me thinking, like, why is that? And what I have noticed is that while we haven't gotten a lot of really cool, fun, inventive horror film, it feels like A24 is not taking a backseat to horror, but they're definitely, like, Talk to Me is the only, what seems like that, and I guess Bo is Afraid, the only real horror films that they've put out this year worth watching. Whereas last year it felt like maybe they didn't either. I guess Pearl and X were the examples. But then you had more inventive horror films. Like last year was very heavy on original, fun horror ideas that got everyone really, really excited. Whereas this year has kind of been the franchise reviving films. Evil Dead Rise, Scream 6. I did not love Scream 5 from, I guess, did it come out 2022 as well? Maybe 2021. And then you had franchise starters like Megan that's been really, really popular this year. Let's see. I can't really tell if there's any more of the kind of the horror realm that's going to start stuff. Talk to Me has just gotten greenlit for a second one. That's been a really big surprise. There was also The Boogeyman, which was released by, I believe, Universal, which didn't get great ratings, but it's kind of an addition to the guy that directed Host, which was a Zoom horror film that came out in, I believe, 2019 or 2020. So horror this year has been more on the franchise end, whereas last year it's been more on the originality, kind of one-offs end. Even though we will be getting the trilogy-ending sequel to X and Pearl and Maxine next year, it is interesting to see the difference. And you could even say that about, like, the box office from this year compared to last year, too. Last year it felt like there was some really fun, cool stuff in leading the box office, and this year it's a little bit swapped as it's kind of newer, maybe franchise starters or like popular films that came out. So kind of flip-flopped of where horror this year has been more franchise starters, blockbusters this year have been more on the, I guess, like, kind of a little bit more on the independent, if you could call it, end for blockbusters, even though they've still been IP-based products. But when we look at horror, if we're looking at like the last 10 years, five of the 10 if we look at the highest grossing horror films of all time, five of the last 10 have been from the last 10 years. So when we look at it and It Chapter 2 have been big ones. World War Z was another one, which I guess you could consider that horror. It Chapter 2, Prometheus, which was 2012, but I think it came out in like November 2012, so still kind of within the 10 years, and The Nun. And then just outside of it, you've got A Quiet Place, The Conjuring 2, The Conjuring, Resident Evil, Annabelle Creation. Those next five right in a row are from the last 10 years. So when I talk about horror being like what it's looked like over the last decade, is we look at these franchises have started to pop up. The Conjuring ones have started. You've had 12 of those Conjuring films. Last 10 years, we've also gotten some of the Insidious sequels, where we had an Insidious, I think, 5 come out this year, and it made crazy returns. Now, while horror might not be maybe the highest grossing films, they typically give you some of the best return on your investment. If we look at typical blockbuster films that maybe plot in like the top 5, top 10, you're looking at getting around a 600% return, or about 6 times what your budget is. Whereas for horror, you're looking at getting around 700 to 800, or if you're that first Paranormal Activity movie, I believe it was like 1.3 million percent, or like 13,000 times the return on what they put into it. So not only is horror very good at getting you return on your investment, but found footage horror has really come into its own. You've had awesome films like I was talking about Horror in the High Desert, two really fantastic, low-budget, great found footage films. The Paranormal Activity franchise, which, say what you want about it, 1 and 3 are a lot of fun. 2 isn't great, and then they really kind of fall off a cliff. But those made crazy money. A really fun movie that came out, and I believe is on Shudder, is called One Cut of the Dead, which is found footage to a degree. So if any of y'all are looking for some cool horror films, I named a few, but One Cut of the Dead is a really great one. In addition to that, like I was talking about, the guy that directed The Boogeyman this year directed Host. If you look at a film like Skinamarink this year, which I absolutely hated. I hated Skinamarink, but it's really pushed what I believe will be kind of the next wave of horror filmmaking, maybe budget filmmaking, is analog horror. What analog horror does is it takes kind of that grainy, maybe like VHS-style footage, and you use it to create some sort of tension or fear on the screen. So a lot of it's very popular on YouTube. And a kid, like call him a kid because I think he's literally 17. He created some shorts on YouTube called The Backrooms. A24 hired him to create a Backrooms film during his summer vacation. So the summer before his senior year, he has already directed a feature film for A24. Through using Blender and different VHS and like different visuals, he's been able to create this really cool world that I think is really impressive. So when we look forward to the future of horror, as we've kind of looked back at what it looks like, you know, the 70s was very inventive. And then once you got to the 80s, like the rest of Hollywood, you got the sequels and you're really milking those sequels because they come around and they're cash cows. You saw that again in the 2000s, but also a little bit in the 90s too. And I think horror is really trying to find a good balance between quality franchises and some independent cool stuff as well. Like, there's a film this year that came out called Ennis Men, which was right there at the edge of that analog horror. Analog horror generally isn't going to be like an in-your-face, like jump scares. It's a little bit more based on the kind of 2-bit 480p resolution, create that really low resolution scare for the audience. And as we look to going forward in like the next 5 years, I think that's going to be something that a lot of people take more seriously, is diving into a little bit of that found footage, but that analog horror, especially to see how that Backrooms film comes out. Now, another thing, and I'm not just biased because I'm making one with my friends, but the black and white kind of noir monster movie, those are going to be really big in the next few years. And the reason I say that is because Robert Eggers' Nosferatu comes out next year. Guillermo del Toro is working on a Frankenstein film with Andrew Garfield, and Maggie Gyllenhaal is working on a Bride of Frankenstein film. Not to mention, I believe that Ryan Gosling is tied to star in a Wolfman film with Lee Whannell to direct. So a lot of these kind of older monster films, these flashbacks to the 1940s and 50s Universal monster pictures, it's going to be really interesting to see the revival of that. Whereas the short film I've been working on, Till Death Do Us Part, which we're deep in the editing process of right now, is also one of those kind of gothic horror pictures. So not to say that we are trendsetters, but that we definitely are trendsetters. I will say that. Excited for all of y'all to see that too when the time comes. So again, when I look at the state of horror, This year, it feels a little bit lackluster compared to last year, but I think we're really trying to get the footing for horror. Next year, we're also going to have Chris Stuckman's Shelby Oaks that me and TC are associate producers on. A good friend of the podcast, Chris Stuckman's got his first feature coming out next year. And it could be a great way to see where found footage goes. It's super reliable. Again, when you look at something like Paranormal Activity or even The Blair Witch, the returns on those movies were absolutely insane. So we'll just have to see. We'll have to see where it all goes. All those Paranormal Activity movies ended up making like 2 to 4,000% more on their return on their budgets. So it's a cool thing to see. Overall, I do think that we could still have some good stuff come out this year. But I will be really, really honest. And the newest addition to this Conjuring franchise of The Nun 2 absolutely was a step back in horror. When we look at The Nun 2, like me and Becky watched The Nun 1 probably 2 weeks before The Nun 2 came out because we thought, oh, it'll be fun. And to be honest, like, I didn't even really realize that there was a Nun 2 coming out. So we watched The Nun 1. It's perfectly average for a horror film. It's about what you would expect. Pretty good cinematography, though. Like, I did find that that was a pretty impressive part of the film. But going into the second one, we're watching, and again, a pretty good cinematography. The film looks nice. It feels like there's some good horror going in there. And then it just delves into nonsense. It delves into some of the most, like, rote, generic horror that you could ever imagine. There's absolutely no stakes in these movies. There's no suspense for your characters because you know that they're all going to survive it. What's even more of a bummer is after you watch The Nun 1, it's kind of like, oh, nice, okay, like, it's basically over. I guess you could see, like, they do set it up for a sequel, but had they taken one scene out, it could look like it was over. And so the reasons for it coming back are make sense, but then it jumps into this, oh, what would you even call it? This MacGuffin? This religious, like, Iron Man reactor that they've got to find to a degree that will, you know, either the nun will become an angel and have godlike powers, or the nun, the good nun, will be able to use it for good, I guess. It just doesn't maintain any sort of continuity in its powers. The nun as well is just absolutely, it's like, if it's a main character in front of the nun, then the nun will just chase them. If it's a secondary or barely introduced character in front of the nun in the film, it's going to use its force powers to lift it up and, like, use and just light them on fire and rip them in half. So there's absolutely no consistency in the lore of these movies at all. And I'm not going to lie, after we watched it, you know, I was kind of like, oh, it feels better than that first one. I think maybe it's, you know, kind of like a C minus, something like that. And then as me and Becky were driving home, she brought up such a great point. She looks at me and she's like, what do these movies even mean? We see the nun in the second Conjuring movie, which takes place 20 years after the nun films. So why do we even have them? Why do we have these defeating the nuns and facing this, like, demon called Valak, which, as a side note, is, like, actually, like, kind of a cool villain. Like, it's actually really good character design, and I like it a lot. But it's so pointless. They defeat the nun twice, spoiler alert for these two generic horror films, and then that's it. But it doesn't matter because it comes back. Like, these movies are purely designed for Warner Brothers to go in, to get a movie made for cheap, to throw it out into theaters so that they can make a budget and make a profit to show, hey, like, look at us. We've got some movies that are making, you know, that are turning a profit. But, like, don't go look at any of our DC stuff in the last 5 years. Just ignore that. That's a work in progress. I mean, these DC films, they've had 3 out this year, and they've lost hundreds of millions of dollars. the people at Warner Brothers Discovery have no idea what they're doing. It's an absolute travesty what they've been able to do with this very interesting franchise in The Conjuring and just absolutely milk it to the bone. It is a malnourished cow sitting in the slaughterhouse just like begging to be given up on, just like begging to be released into the wild. Absolutely do not recommend anyone watch The Nun 2. For me, it's a D, spoiled. The only thing that I kind of liked about it was, one, the character design. Two, I went and saw it with Nick and Spencer of Fun Movie Club, which, as a side note, I did watch Ran. After 5 months, I'm supposed to watch it. I did finish it. So it was fun. And then the lady behind us had, like, I get scared really easily in horror films, but the film would just pan from one scene to the right, revealing the painting of the nun. This lady just screamed at any slight scare. This lady behind us would like scream and yell behind us, and we would laugh so hard. It absolutely made the film, which means nothing and is a nothing movie, into a slightly more entertaining experience. There's also kind of a cool goat character, but again, it doesn't do anything. It doesn't mean anything. It does not put any of our characters in danger. It's just there as another cool character design. So bring back the Crooked Man. I want to see the Crooked Man in this fourth Conjuring movie. I know that it's coming. Also, it had a mid-credit scene, which was nothing. Like, it was just the, you know, those charlatans, the, what are their names from, the Warrens, basically just answering a phone call saying, yes, the Pope, we'd love to help, something like that. So it's real life Ghostbusters or whatever you'd call it. So that's The Nun 2, absolutely not worth your time. As much as I don't love to pan movies, I think that it's okay to pan a generic corporate bastardization of what was some original filmmaking when they were first created. So don't go see The Nun 2. Now, on the other hand, I do want to give my props to a nice little movie that came out called No One Will Save You, starring Caitlin Devers, written by I'm going to bring it up. It was written by Brian Duffield. Written, directed by Brian Duffield, who directed another film called Spontaneous, but he helped write one of the Divergent films. He helped write Underwater. There's like two or three other films that he helped write. The first thing that I want to say is on the topic of corporations just destroying art and turning it into something that purely for their benefit, which I get, it's the business world. This was a 20th Century Fox production that Disney just threw onto Hulu. And I don't know why, because nothing is playing in theaters right now. But you know what has been playing that is consistently performing well? Is horror. Every single time that a new horror film comes out, people go and see it. They pay money to go see it. And this movie called No One Will Save You is about a lonely kind of young adult teenage girl living at home. And when she realizes that something weird might be coming to her house, it is up to her to defend it and defend themselves. Caitlin Devers, it's weird. It's kind of like a silent film. Like, she doesn't really talk much in it. It's mainly based on the visuals and the score that's involved, which I really, really enjoyed the score. But Disney didn't throw this into theaters. I'm really curious as to why, because seeing it, it's a really solid horror film. It's got really great visuals. The scares, it's not like a jump scare kind of movie. It's pretty intense. It's based around an alien invasion, kind of alien abduction. And to see that play out is super interesting. I think anyone that would see this and got a little bit of, I didn't even see a trailer. I just honestly saw Chris Duckman review it, and I was like, oh, a new kind of sci-fi psychological horror thriller? Heck yeah, let's go check it out. And had they put a little bit of time in marketing this thing? I don't know. You know, I don't know if it would have made crazy money at the box office, but throw it into a limited release under the 20th Century Fox banner, and I think it would have earned maybe 10 to 12 million this week, certainly better than the Expendables 4 did. So, yeah, I think it was a really solid film. Brian Duffield showed that less is more in this. You know, it's some really cool, sometimes generic alien design, but the use of abduction and kind of invasion of the body snatchers in this was really interesting. And to show Caitlin Dever's character, who's, as she starts out, you're kind of like, oh my gosh, like she's kind of brutal. Like she's getting really lucky. As the movie goes on, you come to realize, oh, like maybe there's something more to this alien invasion that we're led to believe. Now, in my Letterboxd review, go follow us on Letterboxd, Sweet Film Talk, or TC_LeBaron. I mentioned that this felt very similar to Halloween Kills last year. And when I say Halloween Kills, which comes from Blumfeld, which Blumhouse, kind of interesting that the Five Nights at Freddy movies also is from Blumhouse, comes out this October. That'll be interesting to see how that performs. Another franchise starter, as I was talking about horror films. Halloween Kills from Blumhouse starts off really awesome for the first two acts. Like, it sets it up and you're like, oh my gosh, like maybe it wasn't just Michael Myers that's evil. Maybe it's something about this town. You know, it leans into, to a degree, the Twin Peaks effect where, you know, evil isn't just there. Like maybe the real evil is kind of like the generational trauma that gets passed down. It was interesting to see kind of the twist that Halloween Kills takes on. And then the third act just delves into mediocrity. But No One Will Save You is really awesome. And then the third act hit and I was kind of confused. I think it ties up some ends in kind of a rushed way. Now, if you're watching and pay attention to the movie, you can piece some pieces together and be like, oh, I guess that makes sense how they'd be able to escape that. Or I guess that's maybe how they would understand how to do that. But it does feel just a little bit rushed. And then the message and the themes, I don't really understand what they're trying to say at the end. It could be some sort of, force of nature, learning to live with nature is what we're supposed to do. I've seen something of it being biblical as well, as like once you get through, you know, the trial of your faith, that's when like peace and like living can resume. But I just don't think that ending is really hammered home as well as it could. Even though I still think it's a really solid movie, I give it a B+. It's right around sweet and sour. I think it's actually more sweet. I wouldn't be surprised if it's PG-13. I don't actually know its rating. I'm going to see right now. It's probably like a TVMA. Yeah, I'm not really sure. Oh, PG-13 for violent content and terror. And it's honestly a really worth your time. I think it's a great little horror film to watch, especially as, you know, spooky season is now upon us. As I'm looking at the budget was $22.8 million, and I can kind of see why maybe they dumped it onto Hulu. That just feels like a lot of money. But the way that horror's been performing this year, if you're looking to get $50 million from the box office, I think they probably could have squeaked that out from it. So, No One Will Save You, great horror, kind of like thriller, sci-fi deal with aliens. Interesting premise. Caitlin Devers has great physical acting. I've thought everything that I've seen her in, I feel like I like her a lot. I don't feel like I see her in enough things, though. So, Caitlin Devers, would love to see you act in more things. Or maybe I just need to see more things that you've been in. That's also very, that could be it as well. So, you know, as we're looking, we've kind of been talking about horror this year. Horror, that for me, very, very important. Very, my most favorite genre. And then found footage being my most favorite subgenre of filmmaking. I kind of wanted to bring up what y'all were saying about it. And so I'm going to kind of come over here. Why can we not? Settings and privacy. This is so weird. Why can't I see like what we've posted before? Archiving and downloading. Oh, that's so weird. Yeah, like a few weeks ago, I was asking basically, it's like, how has horror been for all of y'all? You know, how has this year been in horror for you? And essentially, it was kind of in the middle. People thought it was interesting, but maybe not. Maybe not better than other years. And I asked, you know, what's the favorite horror film that you've seen this year? And overwhelmingly, it was Talk to Me. I even had someone that was like, Talk to Me, go watch it tonight. And it's like, oh, well, I watched it like a month ago, 2 months ago when it came out. Not to say that anyone's late to the party, but like, seen it. Good movie. Really liked it. But nothing that's super blown me away. I generally have, like, I mean, last year, Nope was my favorite movie of the year. But I think I had like two or three horror films end up being in my top 10. Even the year before, you know, you had The Night House that came out, The Green Knight, which was horror adjacent. Doing really, really well. So it seems like a lot of y'all are also feeling similarly about horror films, as this year's been a little bit weak. And while we still got a couple months left and we could get some horror type stuff coming out, one thing that y'all can definitely keep an eye out for that will be exciting is when Till Death Do Us Part comes out. Shameless plug for the end of the pod. We're going to do kind of a nice little screening for it. When it's done, we're hoping to have it done by November, but maybe December is when we do a nice showing. So if you're in the Utah area, keep your eyes peeled for our short film. We'll screen it at a theater, and then you can come kind of ask us some questions afterwards. But everyone, thank you for listening to me rant and also praise horror films. I do think that honestly, horror, it's the best bang for your buck in Hollywood right now. If I had $1,000 to invest in any kind of movie and I was presented with, hey, you can invest in this cool A24 horror film or you can invest in the newest Marvel movie, I'm getting more out of the A24 film. I think I'm going to get a better return and I'm probably going to be much more proud with on the screen. So if you don't like horror, if you're really nervous about horror, I'm working on getting like a 31 days of horror kind of guide up for all of you beginners or maybe intermediates that like horror but haven't really delved in, to be able to get some horror films on your list, to get them in front of you, and see what you like and see what you don't like. Maybe the demon stuff you don't like, but slashers you like. Or maybe you like something like Psycho, or maybe you like something a little bit more along the lines of, I don't know, like a Scream. So hopefully we can help y'all find some good movies. Check out all the films I talked about today. Horror in the High Desert is an easy one to watch. I think it's on Amazon and also Tubi or Freevee. Shouts out Dutch. Made two really awesome horror films. Found footage stuff. But next week, TC is back on. We're excited. We're going to talk about The Creator and probably Dumb Money. So, you know, as always, everyone, we hope you have a good week. Go subscribe to C8 Studios. Subscribe to Sweet Film Talk. Give us 5 stars. Go follow us on Instagram as well. And as always, please, please, please stay sweet. Sweet.